Our speaker today, Dr. Barbara Campbell, grew up in Salem, Virginia, graduated from Wake Forest University with a BA in English, then went on to earn an MA and a PhD in English Literature from the University of Virginia. He has held teaching and administrative positions at leading universities, including Baylor University and Virginia Tech, among others. I had the good fortune to study under Dr. Campbell when he was in graduate school, and he was one of the three or four most inspiring teachers I've ever had. To give you an idea of how inspiring a teacher he is, one time in Charlottesville, Dr. Campbell gave a talk on Emily Dickinson on Super Bowl Sunday and actually got people to show up. Of course, that was in the pre-Puppy Bowl days. Dr. Campbell has a passion for great literature and for popular culture, among other things, and will go the extra mile to share the breadth and depth of his passion with interested audiences. For example, Dr. Campbell has contributed an essay to the soon-to-be-published Cambridge Companion to Paradise Lost, that's John Milton's famous poem, while also publishing an article in a film journal on the 1981 classic movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, a movie all Mean Girl fans out there really need to see if you haven't seen it already. Take my word for it, that's an unusual pairing, but typical of Dr. Campbell's wide-ranging interests. Always an enthusiast for technology and computers, Dr. Campbell now serves at DCU as their provost, vice provost for learning innovation and student success. He is a nationally recognized expert on how technology is changing teaching and is, in fact, radically altering the very nature of what we call education. These are vital questions, and Dr. Campbell is at the center of the discussion, traveling around the country and around the world to deliver 20 to 25 talks a year on these subjects. So it is with great pleasure that I introduce this year's cum laude speaker, Dr. Gardner Campbell.
Thank you, Doug, for that very warm introduction. I'm glad to see that the mental corruption took all those years ago. So I am in the business of corrupting young minds one at a time with the most passionate individual connection possible. So it's a great honor to be here today to speak with you and help you celebrate your accomplishments. You're being honored for high achievement, things you work hard to earn. You've been outstanding students, you cum laude people. This early success, it turns out, is one of the best predictors of how you're going to do in college. So your lives are assured. You're great. This is going to work out just fine. Although I know some of you may be a little worried about the next level. They told you, right? When you get to college, it's not going to be the way it is now. We're not going to hold your hands. It's college. That's true, but you'll probably do fine. A little worry keeps you on your toes. But do remember, a little worry, not an anxiety attack. I speak from experience. So in addition to congratulating you and encouraging you to think about your continued learning, which is something that a vice provost is very happy to do, I'm also charged with perhaps saying a few words to you about technology. Turns out this is harder than it may seem. Why? Well, first of all, what can I, standing before you as someone who is a little farther along in life's journey, that's how my undergraduates describe it to me. I love them. They're very delicate with my advanced age. What can I tell you about technology, you technology people, you? What can I tell you don't already know? Some of you may be texting at this very moment. Without even pulling out your smartphones. This is the thing that boggles my mind. As an expert in learning, I'm told you can text reliably through clothing. I don't know how to do that. I'd be happy to learn. If somebody wants to share that technique with me at the reception, that would be great. You would, of course, be outing yourself as a through-the-clothing technology. So maybe that's too much information. But I'm told it can happen. And I'm curious about what you're up to. I'm curious about the ways in which you, depending on who you talk to, are wedded to technology, so wedded that you can't write. Did you know that? You can't write. Kids these days. You can't think, kids these days. You're there with your screens. You're there tweeting and Snapchatting and Instagramming, and you're even vining. That's a verb, isn't it? Should be. You're the ones who speak in LOLs and OMFGs, which is NSFW, and SRSLYs, and emoji. How many have emoji on their... Don't... There's too much information. That's fine. You make selfies. Well, the Pope makes selfies, so that's old, right? You write fan fiction. You hang out on Reddit. You try not to feed the trolls, you know. Don't do that. Facebook may, in fact, be for old people now. That's what I'm told. But you probably spend a little time there as well. These things make adults very, very nervous. You may have noticed this, right? You may be texting about that right now. Some folks believe that your brains are permanently deformed. But... and how would you know? Your brains are deformed. That's the great part. It's your screens, it's your tablets, it's your phones, it's your animated GIFs, it's your Xbox Ones, it's your PS4s, it's even your Google Glass if you're way, way out on the technology curve. The cry goes up from educators everywhere. Why wasn't educational software good enough for you? The Oregon Trail, it doesn't get any better than that. You die of dysentery. Why did you have to use computers outside of school? In school, we keep you safe. In school, we guide your thinking in good, rigorous, developmentally appropriate, college preparatory, student success tested ways. We do this for you. Why go and ruin your mental health on Tumblr? When you have problem sets, homework assignments, and well-moderated teacher-prompted discussion forum threads and a learning management system. Why would you ever do a first-person shooter after that is placed before you? Don't you know the interwebs will make you shallow, stupid, and alone? Experts say. And it's true, these technologies may do that to you. But so may school, too. Here's a little secret you can share when you get home, and they'll say, that's the last convocation you're attending. School is a technology, too. Even if you can't find the on-off switch. In his book, The Nature of Technology, Brian Arthur argues that anything human beings invent to harness a naturally occurring phenomenon for human purposes is a technology. For example, the wind occurs naturally. See, I have a PhD. I know things about the world. The wind occurs naturally. A sail is a technology to harness the power of the wind. Can I be in this society? I made that up this morning. Thank you. I'm in. Yeah. Selfie time. So, learning occurs naturally. Your brains evolved to learn. That's one of the things that distinguishes us as a human species. Lots of, even the puppies in the puppy bowl, they learn, but we have this weird power of learning and symbolic communication. It happens naturally. But school is a technology that's supposed to harness the power of learning and make it more powerful. Schooling is supposed to be the sail that captures the wind of your natural desire to learn and push you through life faster and more elegantly. School is supposed to help you learn faster, more deeply, and more creatively. School is supposed to make your learning last longer and apply to more situations. School is supposed to help you share your learning and to learn from what others share as well. So, school is a technology. It's a technology that we share across generations. It's a technology we should think about and ask ourselves about. Why do we do it? If the sail turns wind into power, does school turn learning into power too? Are you a stronger learner than you were when you started school? Or are you stronger at school? Because you see, schooling and learning sometimes seem synonymous, but they're not really. Learning happens naturally. Schooling is a technology. Has the technology of schooling made you more curious? Has it helped you to ask richer and more complex questions? In fact, do you raise your hand when you have a question? or only when you have an answer. I hope the technology of schooling has helped you with curiosity and creativity, not just problem solving, but problem finding. I hope you've got some tinkering in you, some stubbornness too. You're going to need it all, because things are moving pretty fast in the world we ordinarily think about as technology. When your parents flipped the switch on the technology of school for you, say, what, about 11 years ago for some of you? We'd already had the World Wide Web for about 10 years. We'd had general access to the internet for a little while longer, especially if you were in a university, because we get cool things first. That's why you should get a PhD, so you get cool things first. I'd been a college professor tinkering with the web during that whole time. I'd used it in my own teaching since about 1995 or so. That put me on the bleeding edge in some people's minds. Some of my colleagues would say I'm still on the bleeding edge with the World Wide Web, but never mind, that's another thought. You know, nobody's ever going to put their credit card numbers out on the web. Do you realize that, right? This is a fad. It's going to go away. So I thought I'd seen a lot of changes between 1995 and 2003, about the time you got started on this technology, some of you. I had, but the truth was we were just getting started on some of the web's most revolutionary aspects. For example, you've heard of YouTube. No YouTube until 2005. First video on YouTube, anybody know what it is? First one? They don't teach you that. Doug? Mr. Bader?
I knew the first MTV video.
Okay, that's good. First MTV video, that was the preceding decade? I was there for that too. So it was Video Killed the Radio Star. That was the first one on MTV. The first one is A Trip to the Zoo on YouTube. You can look it up. Just Google first, not now, put that way. Okay. So, no YouTube. Now, we're looking at 6 billion hours watched each month. Just YouTube. It's also the platform that's disrupting education more than any other, because the Khan Academy, Udacity, Coursera, edX, the kinds of things people my age sit around in a room and get our brow all locked into furrowed mode, we think about that. No Twitter until 2006. Now there are over 1 billion registered Twitter users. And think to yourself, if you tweet, you actually are archiving your contribution to the digital age in the Library of Congress. Ladies and gentlemen, the Library of Congress. You should get extra credit for that, don't you think? 2005 or 2004, Facebook begins. Now there are 1.3 billion, with a B, active Facebook users. There was no Apple App Store until 2008. In 2012, there were 20 billion downloads. Billion downloads. Last year, 2013, 40 billion downloads. And there was Flappy Birds for a while, and then they went away. It's the interwebs. In 2004, there were about 1 million Wikipedia pages. Now, in 2014, at that place you've been told you must not use for research, there are 32,560,947 pages in nearly 300 languages. But that was so 4 days ago. And these are just the most widely known of the technologies enabled by, here it comes, personal, interactive, networked, and increasingly mobile computers. A writer named Clay Shirky analyzes some of these changes in a book called Here Comes Everybody. And in it, he says, we are living in the middle of the largest increase in human expressive capability in the history of the human race. This is a great time to be alive. It's like Shakespeare, the Beatles, and, oh, I don't know, Daft Punk. All at once, there it is. And you're here. You're like, on the map, I am here. I hope that the technology of schooling has helped you not only to use but to enjoy that phenomenon. It's a big day for the human species, our species. This is great. I hope the technology of schooling has spent more energy encouraging your curiosity and exploration than it has spent scolding you and telling you to put personal, interactive, networked mobile computing away until the end of the day. I know very well that these computing technologies are disruptive and distracting. Hang on a second, I have to check my email. But that's only part of the story. And you deserve to hear and live in the whole story of human ingenuity. That's part of what school is for. At least that's what we tell ourselves. It may surprise you to learn that some amazing dreams about human potential were a major source of inspiration for the architects of our digital lives. And this has happened so quickly that some of these founders are still alive and out there talking about things. You can find them on YouTube. The fabric of the digital age is woven not only out of money, data mining, distractions, amusements, and invasions of privacy, but also out of dreams. Dreams about making a better world together. Alan Kay, you may not know that name, but I'd put him up there with the people who signed the Declaration of Independence myself. He imagined a thing he called the Dynabook. It's a kind of tablet computer. Way back in the early 70s, that was in the 20th century. This was back when the idea of having a personal computer was like the idea of having a personal aircraft carrier. What would you do with it? And where would you put it? But Kay knew better. He summed up his dream in my favorite saying about computers. And if this is the only thing you remember today, please text, tweet, Snapchat, Instagram, Imgur, Vine, Reddit, whatever you want to do. This is the one. This is it. The computer is an instrument whose music is ideas. I'll say it again. The computer is an instrument whose music is ideas. This is the early 70s. As the technology of your schooling, the grades, the classrooms, the labs, the lessons, prepared you to understand and live up to that dream? Let's go back a little farther. Let's go back to the 1960s. No, I was not at Woodstock, although I think probably Mr. Bader asked me that in a particular moment. I was 12. You can do the math. In 1962, a fellow named Doug Engelbart, who passed away just last year, wrote a little essay called Augmenting Human Intellect, A Conceptual Framework. 1962. And in it, he talks about raising our collective IQ, that is, our ability to invent answers faster than we invent problems, because we're really good at inventing problems as a species. But can we get ahead of that? Can we use our ability to think together to help us find answers quicker than we invent problems? 1962, he has this dream, and this is what he says. By augmenting human intellect, Engelbart writes, we mean increasing the capability of people to approach complex problem situations, to gain comprehension to suit their particular needs, to derive solutions to problems. He goes on to say, by complex situations, we include the professional problems of diplomats, executives, social scientists, life scientists, physical scientists, attorneys, designers, whether the problem situation exists for 20 minutes or 20 years. Sounds like what school's supposed to do. He imagined people sitting in front of screens, interacting with each other in various ways to think together, to raise the collective IQ, which is actually happening even on Reddit, even as we speak. Trust me. Go to Ask Me Anything or Change My View. You may have seen that one. Really interesting stuff. Critical thinking going on without a credit hour or a GPA in sight. What will we do? And he goes on in a part of the dream that's inspired me to say, we do not speak of isolated, clever tricks that help in particular situations. We refer to a way of life in an integrated domain where hunches, cut and try, intangibles, and the human feel for a situation usefully coexist with powerful concepts, streamlined terminology and notation, sophisticated methods, and high-powered electronic aids. 1962, he envisioned that. Has your schooling equipped you and inspired you to live that dream, or as we say at VCU, to make it real? So I'll close with some words from a woman who calls herself my Jewish mother. She nominated herself for that position because she said I needed one. She was right, of course, because Jewish mothers are always right. That's part of how you qualify. Here's what Dr. Janet Murray, who's a professor at Georgia Tech, wrote in the early part of the 21st century. These are words that inspire me on a daily basis. Hope they might resonate with you, too. They describe the promise of the digital world, the world of personal, interactive, networked computing that we're living in, and so far, It's a world that we get to keep on building together. Dr. Murray writes, quote, "The task is the same now as it has ever been. Familiar, thrilling, unavoidable. We work with all our myriad talents to expand our media of expression to the full measure of our humanity." So here's my wish for you. May we work together in this digital age to find and grow our myriad talents, to expand every medium of expression and invent as many new ones as we can think of, and to never give up on the worth and potential of the full measure of our shared humanity, something we get to build together. Thank you.